We're going to discuss this evening is a shiloh that I got this week. Somebody, Baruch Hashem, was blessed to have a healthy baby boy on Shabbos. And the question that they called me with was, is it certain that the bris milah is going to be the following Shabbos? Now, normally, in higher mathematics, 8 days later after Shabbos, the bris milah should be on Shabbos. Are there ever situations where a baby is born on Shabbos and yet we do not have the bris milah performed on a Shabbos? What are the circumstances when a bris milah would not be done on Shabbos? That's what I want to talk about today. We begin with the Mishnah in Maseches Shabbos, Kuf Chav Ches Amud Beis, where the Mishnah tells us, Umiyaldin es ha'isha b'Shabbos. Of course, if a woman is in labor, we are going to do everything we can to help her have a successful delivery, even though it's Shabbos, and even though it's going to entail all kinds of chilul Shabbos, even though we're going to have to drive to the hospital and turn on the lights and do everything that would be necessary for a woman to have a healthy delivery. Of course, on Shabbos, we do that. Not only that, the Gemara writes even further that we're allowed to turn the lights on when a woman is delivering a baby on Shabbos. Ask the Gemara, of course you're allowed to turn the lights on. If we're allowed to drive her to the hospital and we're allowed to do everything else, so what's the question? Are we allowed to turn the lights on? So the answer that's given is that we're talking about a woman who's blind. And even though she's blind and doesn't really see what's going on here, we feel we have enough light. The lights are on. But she's saying, no, I needed to light some more fires because I don't think there's enough light in here. Even though it doesn't correspond to the reality, but it's something that's making her anxious, it's making her nervous. So in a situation like that, the Gemara says we'd be allowed to light the fires on Shabbos and turn on the lights on Shabbos, even though we don't need it. And she's not even able to see how much light there is or isn't in the room. We would do it just because of Yisuva Daita. We would do it just to calm her down and just to be able to lower her anxiety level. So that's what the Gemara says here, that we are allowed to help a woman in any way possible to make sure that she's able to have a healthy delivery. You're able to call a woman who's going to help deliver her, the doctor or the doula or whoever it is. Then the Mishnah says, and we tie up the umbilical cord. Of course, if you don't do that, that's very dangerous. And then the Gemara ends off, the Mishnah ends off and says, not only do we make sure to help a woman as much as we can in the delivery and the birthing, that it should all be done healthy, so too, when it comes to the bris milah, we will do that on Shabbos as well. And the Mishnah then continues later on in the Perek in the Maseches Shabbos, and we're told that osin kol tzarchei milah b'Shabbos. We will do everything that is necessary for a bris milah to be successful on Shabbos. We're going to put on the medications, we're going to do the incision, and we will bandage it up, and we're going to do all that needs to be done in order for a bris milah to successfully be done on a Shabbos, just as we would any other day of the week. Now, the Gemara there has a big discussion in the Amoraim. How do we know that bris milah is allowed to be done on Shabbos? From the premise of the Gemara's question, it's clear that obviously the Gemara is making an assumption that you shouldn't be allowed to do bris milah on Shabbos, and we need psukim to come and teach us why it would be permissible. So let's back up a step. The Gemara here is going to tell us what is the source that we know that you're allowed to do a bris milah on Shabbos. Let's back up a step and ask ourselves, why wouldn't we be allowed to do a bris milah on Shabbos? So what would you say? What are the malachas that are involved? Chabura, okay. So it's interesting. We have a concept in Hilchos Shabbos that we refer to as a malacha she'ein tzricha legufa. What is a malacha she'ein tzricha legufa? All the malachas in the Mishkan are the ones that are going to determine, all the different activities that were necessary to build a Mishkan are what determine the terms of the Lamentes Avos Malachos today for Shabbos. So it has to be similar to the kind of activity that was done in the Mishnah. Not only similar in the activity, but also similar in the projected outcome. Why did we do this? Similar in the impetus for doing the activity as well is necessary in order to violate a law of Shabbos. It has to be something that's similar to the Beis HaMikdash. And therefore, if you're doing what we refer to as a malacha shein tzricha legufa, that would not be an isur d'oraisa on Shabbos. For example, what would an example be? Malacha shein tzricha legufa, for example, the Gemara says, if I have, unfortunately, a person passes away on Shabbos, and now I have the dead body in the house. Now, if I leave it here for the rest of Shabbos, it's going to smell up the whole house. We're not going to be able to use the house. So what do? We want to move the body outside. Now, why are we moving the body outside? Because we want it to be outside instead of inside? No. If there was another way to seal off the body inside of the house, we would do that. The only reason we're putting it outside is just because we don't want it inside. Now, normally when we talk about the malacha of hotza on Shabbos, it means I had an item that was in place A. I want it to be in place B, and therefore I do hotzah when I transfer it from place A to place B. Here, that's not the reason why I'm doing it. I'm not doing it because I want this body to be moved from place A to place B. It's because I don't want the house to smell. And I want to be able to use the space in the house. And therefore, the Gemara assumes that would be called a malacha she'ein sricha legufa. Take for another example. The Gemara Masechta Shabbos, Daf Ayin Gimel, talks about the malacha of choresh, which means you're not allowed to plow on Shabbos. Now, generally, when I dig a hole in the ground, why am I digging a hole in the ground? Because I want to put something in. I want to plant. I want to build a bathtub. So I make a big hole in the ground. Whatever it is, I make a hole in the ground because I want to use the space. What about a person who digs a hole in the ground, not because he wants the hole, but rather because I need the dirt? I want to use the dirt for something else. So that, the Gemara says, is a malacha she'ein sricha legufa, because that's not the way that it was done in the Beis HaMikdash. In the Mishkan, they dug holes because they had to put something in the ground. Now you're doing the same action, the same activity, but you're doing it for a totally different purpose. You're doing it because not you want a hole in the ground, but rather because you want to take the dirt that is going to emerge from the hole in the ground. So the Shulchan Aruch says many different examples of this. Another very common example is the malacha of netilas neshama. You're not allowed to kill on Shabbos. Now, in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Mishkan, why did they kill animals?
Karbanos,
right? Because they wanted them to be sacrificed, or they killed an animal because they needed to use the hides or the skins for the purpose of building the Mishkan. What if I'm killing a mosquito, not because I need the skin for something, and not because I want the dead mosquito for any purpose, but rather because I don't want it to bite me? Or the case that the Shulchan Aruch gives is, I have a nachash, I have a snake that's roaming around, I'm afraid someone's going to get hurt. So I want to kill the snake, not because I want to use the snake skin for anything, but rather because I just don't want the snake to bother any of us. That's called a malacha she'ein sricha legufa. So ask yourself over here, the malacha of gozes, let's say, right? That's what some say the malacha by bris milah is, that you're shearing, right? You're detaching something from the place where it was attached. So you have a bris milah, and you're going to do an incision. Normally, when I detach something from an animal, let's say, so I'm shearing the wool off because I want to use that which I'm taking off. Here, I'm doing the act of bris milah. I'm cutting something off and I'm disposing of it. I don't want it. Isn't that a malacha she'ein sricha legufa? And if it's a malacha she'ein sricha legufa, then this is not even a malacha. So why does the Gemara say that I need to have a proof that a bris milah is allowed to be done on Shabbos? What's the problem with doing a bris milah on Shabbos? The Torah never said it was problematic in the first place. So I don't need a pasuk to teach me that as mutter. This is a big, big discussion in the Rishonim, in the Acharonim, to figure out what the whole premise of the Gemara is all about, which I think is interesting. But either way, the Gemara tells us in Maseches Shabbos Kuf Lamed Beis that we have a number of different sources to teach us that a bris milah is going to override Shabbos. A bris milah is docha Shabbos. Number one, the Gemara says we learn it from Gzeira Shavah. Two psukim, same words, and from that we learn that bris milah is docha Shabbos. Then the Gemara says Rabbi Yochanan is of the opinion that the source of this is the Torah says in Parshas Tazria, Isha ki Tazria. When you have a woman who conceives, v'yalda zachar, then she carries out the pregnancy, has a healthy baby boy, v'haya bayom hashmini yimol b'sar alaso. On the eighth day, you're going to give him her bris milah. Says the Gemara, bayom, why does it say bayom hashmini? Bayom means afilu b'shabbos. Bayom means whatever the eighth day is, then we're going to do the bris milah, whether it's Shabbos, whether it's Yom Tov, whether it's Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, it doesn't matter. We're going to make sure to do the bris milah regardless, because Bayom Hashmini teaches us that you do it on the eighth day. The Mechilta actually has an interesting source, which is the Pasuk says, V'shamru v'nei Yisrael es haShabbos. We want to make sure that Jews keep Shabbos. So we have a cloud. The Gemara says, Chalel alav Shabbos achas, kedei sheyishmar Shabbos es harbe. Sometimes it's worth overlooking this Shabbos, in order that in the future we should be able to observe many, many Shabbosos. For example, the Shulchan Aruch gives a case in Hilchos Shabbos, what happens when you have Misha Nashva Bito Ben Umos HaOlam. You have a woman who was taken captive, a young girl. And there's no concern that anything immoral is going to happen. There's no concern that anyone's going to do anything that they shouldn't do to her. But all they're going to do, which is not all, but what they're planning to do to her is, they're going to teach her how to serve Avodah Zarah. She's no longer going to be a Jewish woman. So we have to be concerned. Am I allowed to be Mechal Shabbos? Not for Pikuach Nefesh, but rather because, I guess it's real Pikuach Nefesh, it's the soul, right? She's gonna lose her understanding of Yiddishkeit because they plan to take her away. Shulchan Aruch says yes. What's the heter? It's not pikuach nefesh. Why would it be allowed to? The answer is chalel alav Shabbos achas kedei sheyishmar Shabbos es harbe. It's worth it to get in my car and save this person now on Shabbos to violate one Shabbos in order that for the rest of the duration of her life she'll be able to spend many, many Shabbos in the future being able to observe Shabbos properly. And therefore the Gemara says here as well, it's worth it to be mechal Shabbos by a bris mila in order that this child should be able to have the opportunity to observe many, many healthy Shabbos in the future with a bris mila that was done at the proper time. Anyway, that's what the Gemara says, that we have this idea of a bris mila being docha Shabbos, even though on face value it would have seemed that this is something that maybe should not have been done because it's some kind of malacha, not clear exactly what it would have been, but that's clearly what the Gemara says. Now, what are the exceptions to the rule? The Gemara says in Masechah Shabbos Kuf Lamed Beis, and this is Paskin in Shulchan Aruch Simin Shin Lamed Aleph, that Mila Shalo Bizmana, if I have a child who wasn't feeling well, and they couldn't have their bris mila on the eighth day, and now it's 2 weeks later, and the doctors give a clearance, and they say it's fine, no problem, no danger to the child to have their bris mila, says the Gemara, you're not allowed to have that bris mila on Shabbos, even though the doctors say it's healthy to do it, and there's no reason to delay. You already delayed it 2 weeks, still we would say you have to wait until Sunday. You're not allowed to do it today on Shabbos, you have to wait until Sunday. It's actually interesting. The Taz in Yerodeya writes, when I have a Mila that falls out on the eighth day, so I do it whatever day that is, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, whatever day it is, Friday, Shabbos, whatever day of the week, we're going to do the Bris Mila. What about when I have a Mila Shalo Bizmana? So we just said, you don't do it on Shabbos. Writes the Taz, maybe when you have a Mila Shalo Bizmana, you're not allowed to do it on Thursday or Friday either. Why not? Oh, so he says, perhaps the reason why is because if you're going to do it on Thursday or Friday, you're going to end up very likely having to be Mechal Shabbos to take care of the baby and to cure whatever infection may ensue from the Bris Mila. And because we don't want to get into that problem. So if the eighth day falls out on Friday or on Thursday, so you do it on Friday or Thursday or on Shabbos. If the eighth day falls out 2 weeks ago, and now we're just waiting for a clearance from the doctor, and the doctor on Thursday morning says, oh, go do the Bris Mila, says the Taz, maybe we should make sure not to do it on Thursday, not to do it on Friday, not to do it on Shabbos, like the Gemara says, and you're going to push it off to Sunday, which is so unbelievable to think about that. We're going to push off a Bris Mila so many extra days, but that is what the Taz discusses. It has relevance not only in that case. The Mishnah Berurah Paskin is like the Shach, which is, the Shach's opinion is that we do the Bris Mila whenever it falls out during the week, even if it's a Mila Shalom Bizmana, and we're going to do it on Thursday or Friday, and it's going to make us have to change a bandage on Shabbos and be Mechal Shabbos potentially. We do the Bris Mila whenever the baby's ready. He disagrees with the Taz. It's relevant today when you have a Ger who comes to be Megayer, and part of the process of Geirus is that he has to have a Bris Mila. Are we allowed to do the Milas HaGer on a Thursday or Friday?
It's like
a Mila Shalom Bizmana, like any other Mila Shalom Bizmana. So maybe it's like a Mila Shalom Bizmana. Maybe it's worse. Why is it maybe worse? Maybe it's less than that. Why? He doesn't have a mitzvah mila. He doesn't have a mitzvah mila at all. Let him wait till Sunday. There's no reason. It's correct. In Shulchan Aruch, there's a discussion. Am I allowed to be yotzei l'svina within 3 days of Shabbos or not? Am I allowed to go on a boat within 3 days of Shabbos? The Gemara says, the Shulchan Aruch says no. Why? Because a bunch of different reasons, complicated sugya. But yes, the Gemara says you're not supposed to go out l'svina within 3 days of Shabbos. Some say because it's going to inevitably cause you to have to be Mechal Shabbos. Now, if I'm going on a cruise and I'm going to be on it for 6 weeks, so okay, so of course you're going to pass through a Shabbos and that's the way it's going to be. But anyway, that's the discussion. Rav Avadi Yosef has a long tshuva, I believe, about whether or not we're allowed to do the Milas HaGer, who's converting. He has no mitzvah Bris Mila, but he has to do it to take care of it. So is he allowed to have the Bris Mila done on a Thursday or Friday, or would you say no? The Taz may have been rejected when it comes to a Mila Shalom Bizmana because the child has an obligation to have a Bris Mila. But here we have a non-Jew, there is no obligation. Let him wait till Sunday. And let him do it then where he has no problems with Shabbos.
When does the Ger do Kabbalah Samitzvah? Is it before the meal or after the meal?
Same. He goes to the mikvah also.
Right, so I'm saying, but the mikvah is not ma'akev.
The mikvah sure it is. Mikvah is also ma'akev. Yeah. He has to go to the mikvah. There's a discussion in Rishonim actually. What happens when the Bris Mila was performed before the Yom HaShmini? Let's say you miscalculated, the Moel comes in on the seventh day by mistake, and he does the Bris Mila. So, is that Mila valid or not? Now, you'll say, what's the difference? He already made the incision. What are you going to do now? So the Shulchan Aruch discusses, maybe we should do Hatafas Dam Bris. Maybe you should do something, make some kind of incision. Obviously, don't cut anymore, but to make some kind of incision that blood should be let. So this is a big discussion. There are more quotes from the Rush that b'dieved, if one did a bris milah on the wrong day, meaning he did it too early, and it was betoch shmona yamin, was within the first 8 days, we say, ain sarach lahatif dam bris. You don't have to go back and do it again. It's good enough. It says in the Torah, you're supposed to wait till the 8th day. If you didn't wait till the 8th day, it's okay, and it's not a problem. The Shach disagrees, and the Shach says, what are you talking about? Torah says, b'yom ha-shemini yima b'sara loso. Has to be on the 8th day. If you didn't do it on the 8th day, and you did it earlier, there's no relevance to what you did. It has no value in halacha at all. And the Shach proves it. The Shach proves that he's right. Why does he prove that it's right? Because the Gemara here goes out of its way to say that we're allowed to do a bris milah on Shabbos and mimachal Shabbos. Ask the Shach, when we have a baby whose 8th day falls out on Shabbos, why don't we all make the bris on Friday? So it's b'dieved, but why not make the bris on Friday and then circumvent the issue of being mechal Shabbos? That would be a great idea. That would be a good way to get around the problem, and then you wouldn't have to do any problem, any issue on Shabbos. Why doesn't anybody do that, says the Shach? Because you're not allowed to do that. Because you can't give a bris milah within the first 8 days. It has to be on the Yom HaShmini or further. So that's an interesting discussion. Okay. Anyway, the Gemara says that any time that we have a suffolk, any time we have a doubt about the bris milah, we would not do that bris milah on Shabbos, even if that was the 8th day. So for example, if you have a child who's born with ambiguous genitalia, you have a child who's born a tumtum, an androgynous, the Gemara talks about, you're not sure if it's a man, if it's a woman, if you have such a thing, so then we would say, even though the 8th day is Shabbos, but still we would not do a bris milah then because that is something that is not Docha Shabbos. And similarly, if you have a child who's born Bein Hashmashos, you have a child who's born in the twilight zone, and we're not sure exactly, is it Shabbos, is it not? So then we're not going to violate Shabbos the following week. We're going to err on the side of caution and say, you know what? Don't do the bris milah on Shabbos because we're concerned that maybe you're doing a chilul Shabbos for no reason. Now, the case that we were describing here is this woman had a C-section. What's the halacha when one has a C-section? So there the Gemara says, if a woman did not have a natural birth, which a C-section is not considered a natural birth, if a woman did not have a natural birth, then that bris cannot be done on Shabbos. 8 days later, it can't be done on Shabbos. Says the Gemara, Amar Avasi, kol she'imo tamei leida nima lishmona. Here's the formulation that he comes up with. Let's look back at the pasuk where we're told about bris milah. What does it say? Isha ki tazriya v'yalda zachar. If a woman conceives, has a baby, and then the end of the pasuk is, on the 8th day, you do a bris milah. Says the Gemara, it has to follow that sequence. It has to follow that formula. So the woman has to naturally give birth, and then we do the bris milah, even on Shabbos, if it's 8 days later. However, if one of the steps in that process did not happen because it was not a natural delivery, then we assume that eino nima lishmona. We're going to push that off to the Sunday, because we're not going to be mechal Shabbos. That is Paskin and Shulchan Aruch and Yaradeya. Hilchas Milah, some Reish HaMachlav, that if a woman had a cesarean section, she would not have a bris milah on the 8th day if that fell out on Shabbos.
Is she still now, Temeya?
What?
Is she still
Temeya? A C-section? So that's a good question. A woman a C-section in the end, most of the times, again, I don't have so much experience, but it seems to me, from the women I've spoken to, most of the time they're going to bleed anyway because there's pressure in that area, and it's not so simple. But theoretically, yes, if a woman recovers from the surgery and doesn't have any bleeding, then we would say theoretically, yes, she would have the ability to go to the mikveh earlier than many other women.
And no carbon.
Correct. Correct. So now let's see. What if we change the case slightly? What did we just talk about? The Shulchan Aruch says if a woman does not give birth naturally, then the bris milah is not docha Shabbos. What if a woman did give birth naturally? However, she didn't conceive naturally. And then she has a baby, and it's a baby boy, and the 8th day falls out on Shabbos. Now, what does it mean you didn't conceive naturally? Immaculate conception? No, we don't believe in that. So what happened? So we know that this is very famous today and something that we do all the time, IVF. IVF. That's not a natural conception. If that child was conceived through IVF, and then later on was born on a Shabbos, would we do the bris milah on Shabbos? Now, it sounds crazy. Why not? Why wouldn't we? Well, take a step back and ask yourself, why is this different than what the Gemara describes about the child who's not born naturally? The Gemara there says, Amar Avasi, let's follow the sequence of the Pasuk. What does the Pasuk say? Isha ki tazriya, v'yaldo zachar. The woman has to conceive. The woman has to have a baby. And then, Bayom HaShmini Yima B'Sar Laso. If one of the steps in that process is not followed, you can't do the Bris Milah on Shabbos. Yeah, let's back it up. What if the first step of the process didn't happen? It wasn't Isha Ki Tazria. The woman didn't become pregnant in a natural way. So of course it's her child. Of course it's legitimate. And of course there's nothing to talk about that, but it's not Isha Ki Tazria. It didn't happen in the natural way that a woman usually becomes pregnant. So that is the question that the modern day poskim deal with, based off of that Gemara. Should we say, the same way the Gemara says a child is born with an unnatural delivery, such as a C-section, we would say that the Bris Milah is not Tocha Shabbos. Maybe a child who's born through an unnatural conception should also not be able to do a Bris Milah. Now that would become a very complicated issue, because when you have a Moel who's called to do a Bris Milah on Shabbos, he's going to start asking the question. So, was the child born in Ben Hashmashos? No. Was the child born naturally? Yes, the child was born naturally. Are there any other shah? Is there ambiguous genitalia? No, it's not a tumtum or androgynous. Everything's fine. Everything matches up. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you conceive the child naturally or did you have IVF? So every mo is going to have to start asking every couple now whether or not this child was naturally conceived. And then what are they going to say? People are going to ask them, why is the bris not on Shabbos, doing the bris on Sunday? So what are they going to say? Well, it wasn't a C-section. She's not recovering from a terrible surgery. There's nothing else wrong. The child is healthy. So why are we not doing the bris on Shabbos? So then you have to go announce to the world that you had an IVF treatment, and that's why. So that's something to think about. It's a very important issue. So what this comes to really is a Gemara Maseches Chagiga. The Gemara says, we know that a Kohen Gadol has to marry a Besula. Kohen Gadol has to marry a virgin woman. Says the Gemara, what happens if you have a Besula Sheibra? What if I have a virgin woman that's pregnant? Is she allowed to marry a Kohen Gadol? Now that's a contradiction in terms. How can you have a virgin woman who's pregnant? How can that be? So the Gemara has this discussion. How is it possible that you have a Besula that's pregnant and she's thinking of marrying a Kohen Gadol? What's the likelihood, and how is it possible that any of this happened? So the Gemara doesn't really get into the details of it, but basically Rabbeinu Chananel explains we're talking about an Isha Shehis Abra Be'ambatia. What does it mean? Says Rabbeinu Chananel. You have a woman who uses the local bathtub, the bathhouse. They didn't have private bathtubs. And they didn't change the water. So there must have been a man who went first, and then the woman took a shower or a bath afterward, and somehow she miraculously became pregnant. Now, says Rabbeinu Chananel, that's Maisa Nisim. We believe in gravity. Gravity means things don't go up, things go down. So how is it possible that something in the water somehow floated its way into somebody's body? It just doesn't make sense. But maybe there's such a likelihood, maybe there's such a possibility, says Rabbeinu Chananel, if that would happen, Eina Tumea Leida, that woman would not be considered Tumas Leida when she finally has the child 9 months later, because this came about through a Maisa Nisim. This is not the normal way that a person conceives. And therefore, he says, since a woman does not conceive in that way, it doesn't follow the sequence of the Torah when describing a woman's process from beginning with conception to the child being born, to the Bris Milah later on, 8 days later. And since that process is not followed, Rabbeinu Chananel writes in Maseches Chagiga, we would say that the woman does not have to follow any of these rules. And there, from there, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says, maybe we should draw a parallel to a woman who became pregnant through IVF. That's the same as Rabbeinu Chananel says, we have this unbelievable scenario that somehow a woman was in Sabar Ban Batya, how can it be? Well, Rav Shlomo Zalman, we have that today. We have a woman who can have some kind of miraculous ability to become pregnant, even though she wasn't naturally with her husband. How can that be? Says Rav Shlomo Zalman. Rav Shlomo Zalman said in 1958, he wrote a tshuva where he said that this would be a parallel case to the story of Rabbeinu Chananel of Nesaber Ban Batya. This is the Maisa Nisim of today. This is totally miraculous, unbelievable. And therefore, he says, we would say that this woman would not warrant a Bris Milah for her son on the Yom HaShmini if it was Shabbos. That's what he says. That's what Shlomo Zalman writes. Again, important to realize it was in 1958 that he said that. My father actually accepts that opinion. My father feels that a Bris Milah should not be done for an IVF baby if it was Shabbos. Again, it's uncomfortable how you can explain it to people, but that's his opinion. The Mishnah Savram, that's Dr. Abraham, writes that Rabbi Zriel Arabach, who's the son of Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, who married Rabbi Yashiv's daughter, so they were mechutanim, he said that his father-in-law, Rabbi Yashiv, told him the same thing, that he feels that an IVF baby, if the baby's born on Shabbos, should not have the bris performed on Shabbos because it doesn't follow the sequence that the Torah describes. Isha ki tazria, v'yalda zachar, v'yam ha-shmini yimel b'sar alasso does not apply to this case. Now, what's interesting is that Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach himself changed his mind later on in life. He said, now that this has become such standard procedure for so many couples in our communities that they go through IVF cycles and they have very, very healthy children, nobody looks at this anymore as a maisa nisim. Nobody says, wow, this is like outrageous that this couple did it. In 1958, it was outrageous. It was brand new. It was something that was very unusual and something that was very uncommon and something that really was looked at as a maisa nisim. And therefore, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman said, that's exactly a parallel to Rabbeinu Hananel. But today, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman said, maybe the situation changes because our whole relationship with IVF has changed. We accept it to be a natural part of conception when many people are doing this, and it's not something that we marvel at anymore. Of course we should, but we don't. And therefore he says that maybe his psak had changed. That's why Rabbi Avadi writes in the Abiyah Omer as well, that he feels that we should do the bris milah on Shabbos, even if it's an IVF baby who did not come through the natural means of Isha Ki Tazriah. That's what he feels. I think it's a very interesting issue how something like this can potentially change over the years, dependent on how much of a familiarity we have with this area of science. It's a fascinating thing to consider. What?
So
a C-section. C-section, yeah.
Delivery. This is a normal course to deliver babies.
Yeah. So the reason for that is not because it's not normal. It's because it doesn't follow what the Torah says. But here, Rabbeinu Hananel says, anytime I have a maisa nisim, anytime I have something that's so out of the ordinary, that's so unusual, so then we wouldn't do it. So that's the question. One final question to think about, which we don't have time to get into, is we find very often in the Gemara, let's say with regard to blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah that falls out on Shabbos, and by Talad Minim on Shabbos, that we do not blow the shofar, we don't read the Megillah on Shabbos, we don't shake the Talad Minim on Shabbos, all of that, why? Because we're afraid maybe someone's going to go, they're not going to know how to blow the shofar, they're going to run outside with the shofar, they're going to violate the Malach of Hutzah. Okay, that's the Gemara's discussion. So, Tosis asks, then why do we do a Milah on Shabbos? Why aren't we concerned that someone's going to carry the knife outside, just like you're going to carry the shofar, and you're going to carry the lulav, you're going to carry the Megillah? Aren't we concerned you're going to carry the knife outside? You're going to violate Hutzah. What?
Mol's
a different level. So that's true. Tosis says Mol's a different level, but why is he a different level? So Tosis writes, the reason why is because, why are we concerned by a shofar? We're concerned by a shofar because knowing how to blow a shofar is not so simple. And the Baal Tokeh is going to show up in Shul Rosh Hashanah morning, he's going to say, wow, I really didn't prepare, I don't know how to do this. He's going to quickly run outside with the shofar to go to some professional somewhere and learn how to do it. By a mila, which mole would ever agree to be a mole without knowing what he's doing? What? So that's an interesting concern. That's an interesting concern, but I guess they didn't have as big communities as we have today. There's one bris every couple of months. That was a big... I don't know the answer to that. It's an interesting question. It reminds me, the Stechemet actually asked, and we'll close with this, it's time for Maariv. The Stechemet actually asked that when Pesach night falls out on Shabbos, why don't we have the same concern? Why don't we not eat matzah Pesach night? You should be concerned. You have to do it with a seba. It has to be within the Dalet Kosas. You have to do it with the whole Haggadah and everything. Maybe you have an Amaretz in the community that doesn't know how to have a Seder. And he's going to realize Pesach is Friday night. He's going to come to sit down with his family. His wife, his children are going to turn to him and say, how do we do this? What do we do? He says, I don't know. Let me go run to the rabbi's house and ask him. He's going to grab his matzah and his marah and all of his Dalet Kosas, run to the rabbi and ask him, how do I do this? What am I supposed to do? So the Stechemet wonders, why do we not say that Pesach night we don't eat matzah and we don't have Dalet Kosas? The same reason why we don't blow shofar and we don't shake lulav. So everyone's looking at me like it's a ridiculous question. Why is it more ridiculous than shofar and lulav? Same concern, same problem. Interesting question. I assume by the time Pesach rolls around, everybody knows what they're doing. Everybody has a Maxwell House Haggadah. Nobody's going to get stuck. I don't know, but it's a good question that the Stechemet asked. I think he asked it in the name of the Netziv, if I'm not mistaken. That's something to think about.
They practice